Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of American Desis. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
And welcoming to what we have on our show today, Shilpa Munkikar. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, nailed that. We are excited to have you on. Shilpa is a filmmaker, an activist, and I'm going to jump right to it. The reason that I was excited about talking with you today and bringing you onto the show is because as a filmmaker, you have made films in India. You have made films in the States.
That's right.
I would love to hear about some of the differences of what it's like to make a film in India. What are those obstacles? And how is it different from making stuff here?
Well, so when you're working in the US, you have to deal with insurance and SAG and like all these, hoops
that
you have to
jump.
Exactly. Sometimes there's no script either.
Really?
So I mean, it depends whether you're working on Bollywood or independent stuff. And right now there's a huge wave of underground filmmakers and new people doing really exciting stuff over there. But for example, when you rent a camera, you'll get three guys with it.
Is that in India?
Yeah, in India. One to carry the tripod, one to carry the camera body, and like one to just make sure everything is there and working. So you kind of automatically get a crew with your gear. Oh. Of course, you may want to choose your DP and all that kind of thing. But
when were you out there making stuff?
I go every few months. For a few years, I was going every 6 months and spending several months out there. And recently, it's picked up more here. So
when did you start that? Did you? Now you weren't born and raised out there, right?
Grew up in New York and New Jersey, which every other person is Indian anyway in New Jersey.
Whereabouts in Jersey were you?
West Orange.
West Orange. Okay, so that's near Edison. I guess Edison is
Where Edison actually his factory was. So that's where the first movie studio was actually.
Wow.
And you can go visit that. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to do that, but I appreciate knowing that that's something I can skip when I'm in West Orange, New Jersey.
Wax cities will tell you about their landmarks immediately. Don't they? Cities with nothing else going on. You know, the first peanut was manufactured. I don't care, man.
So you were born and raised. So I guess I'm just curious as to what made you decide that you were ready to like go make stuff there? Because we got a lot of people that are doing stuff here, but not all of them are like, hey, let me go back to
I was working here on a lot of independent stuff, and I worked with Spike Lee and Adrian Shelley and a lot of...
Hold up while we brush the dirt off your shoulders.
Yeah, I don't know who that second one is, but that was Spike Lee.
And so I was really inspired, especially working on Bamboozled. I was on the late shift, so I had a day job and I was there at night. So I would get to watch his whole DVD collection.
Oh, wow.
Because there was no one else in the office.
Right.
And so that really inspired me because a lot of the filmmakers were like Oscar Michaud who were putting out work for their community, even with the Great Depression. And
so who was that name again? Sorry.
Oscar Michaud.
I don't know who that is. Can you educate us, please?
Yeah, he's an early African-American filmmaker, and he had his own studio in the Great Depression and under Jim Crow. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and he was making a lot of stuff about his community and then releasing it in a...
So that really spoke to you today?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, okay.
Like, if people can do it under really hard circumstances, what's our excuse, right?
That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
So from there,
can you give us a scope of timeline? When was this?
Oh, this was like 99, 2000.
Okay.
And so
we really weren't like huge in the scene yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was a little bit of a bold thought that was already coming in your head.
Yeah, I guess so. And
we'll take that credit.
Yeah, take that. Sure, take what we're giving you, please.
Yeah, we're pioneers, right? All of us.
I mean, you more than us is what we're trying to say. I think that's what we're trying to recognize, is that, like, there have been people. So wait, so at what point, so this is 99 you're talking about, when did you decide, I'm going to go to India?
Well, so I was looking for a stable day job after freelancing, and I got into distribution at Universal Studios. And I would meet, you know, every few months, one South Asian person, like Asif Kapadia, who just made Amy. We'd be the only brown people in the room, for example. And their work wasn't necessarily reaching the mainstream audience at that point. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of us started this alternative network, Third Eye. And so we started hosting the filmmakers here from all over the diaspora. And
here being in New York?
In the U.S., like in San Francisco, L.A., New York.
Oh, so we would move travel around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many people would come, like, when the first year started, how many people were there?
We were shocked. Our first screening was Gurinder Chadha's short films, and we sold out, like, 300 people.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
And these were all filmmakers, or these were other, like other people
just
from the public
other
also?
General public,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Wow.
And then to the point where we were doing Bollywood screenings with 1,500 people at film festivals and stuff like
wow.
that.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's definitely an audience, and it hadn't quite caught on yet. And I built my network with the other filmmakers in the diaspora, basically releasing their work here. And then when they would come to shoot here, I would produce for them or help them out here.
Now, when you're saying that you would do these, that when they would come here, so you're saying that these were people that were outside of the States making films for the United States or making films, period, that you would help distribute to the States?
Yeah, we would help them distribute. Some of them were from the UK. Some of it was stuff like Goodness Gracious Me, the comedy series right. that didn't get released in the US. We would screen that in a theater.
Okay.
Or, you know, the underground filmmakers from South Africa who were doing content for the diaspora, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. Music videos.
How were you finding these filmmakers? Was it just something that you knew about? Was it just something that...
Well, I mean, we would source them at film festivals okay. or, you know, stuff, word of mouth that we had heard about.
But is this where your work at Universal was really coming to benefit you because you knew about distribution, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, it was more of like translating that distribution stuff into our community and also looking at the DJ culture and how they were doing it with music and applying the same idea for film and
like what were television. Some of the ideas you applied?
Like we were cross-promoting with different communities, like we would do the Spanish Film Festival or something like that and have a movie about a South Asian guy in Spain. Café con Leche was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would tour the stuff around, we would tour the projects around the
country.
So
you would base the project on like who you wanted to collaborate with, or you just happen to have this project with a Spanish dude in it, or like in Spain?
Yeah, exactly.
You like, oh, we might as well just tie this in while we're...
Yeah, they were already finished, and they were out in the marketplace in their own country, but they didn't have a wider audience okay. in the U.S., basically.
So
like,
you were basically the bridge for these out-of-market, out-of-the-country films to come into the States
exactly.
and help them find the niche, what we would call maybe niche sort of audiences that you would find. And you found that the audience was, it sounds like, more than you expected at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Way more than we expected. And, you know, some of the older people would relate to the Bollywood stuff because they grew up watching Fred Astaire, for example, and
now
younger
older
people.
White folk.
Yeah, or across the board. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you weren't just trying to get this to a South Asian audience.
No, not at all.
Oh,
it was
okay.
For
so
a
it was like
audience.
Trying to get it out to everybody.
Trying
yeah.
to get South Asians to the whole audience.
But then after 9/11, when we weren't really getting much of our voice out there, and there was the backlash starting and all that, then we were also, you know, trying to empower the community and mm-hmm. and doing more of material that we had that was more homegrown here, you know.
What was the backlash like, just kind of off topic, 9/11, what was the backlash like in the Northeast? Because you grew up in Jersey, right
yeah,
next
well,
to New York.
I mean, we grew up with the Dot Busters and stuff like that. I mean, they were already sort of targeting our community.
What's the Dot Busters? What's that?
The Dot Busters was a group in the 80s that specifically, because the Indians and South Asians were moving into neighborhoods that were predominantly white. They were there was a backlash in the 80s itself.
Were these predominantly affluent areas that we were moving into? Or
no,
just
no,
any
like
area?
Jersey City, for right. example. So yeah, where a lot of the factories had left and our community was moving in. And
so what did the Dot Busters do? They just come in and beat asses or what?
Yeah, they would go around, they killed a couple of people, and then they would go on the news and say they're going to invade your birthday party or something like that. So,
oh, sure.
And
so
they
it was
beat
home,
up
it was
people.
Terrorism.
Yeah, basically. I
mean,
and
if we're not going to call Oregon terrorists, we should, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
just call
yeah.
it really for what it is.
It was the Klan for targeting Indians.
Yeah.
Basically.
Was this mainly focused, were these Dot Busters mainly focused in the Northeast? Because I didn't hear about this growing up.
Yeah,
like,
I think it was just
south.
In this area, actually.
It's interesting that that's not something that's talked about more in our community. I mean, maybe it's just my naivete growing up in the South, but I've been in New York for like almost 10 years and it's interesting that that's interesting. That's crazy to hear that. And I'm almost, you know, a little embarrassed that I didn't know it before, but that's wild. So this was happening before even all of this was happening with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Did those stories get told? Were those stories something that people were like, let's tell this story, or was that not?
Well, it was something that we would see on Ion Asia or the Sunday morning Indian news or whatever, you know? And I think there were a few New York Times articles about it.
But there weren't like auteurs or filmmakers like telling those stories yet.
Not yet, no.
So it really happened after 2001, after
yeah,
September
yeah,
11th,
yeah.
that
Definitely.
We started to say, hey, we need to start telling our stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like maybe more of a national
Yeah,
against.
I mean, it was a combination of our generation, you know, being old enough to tell our own stories, and suddenly this backlash, the combination of it, and lack of institutional support. Like, a lot of, you know, after 9/11, it was like, well, are you on the enemy side, or what are you trying to say here?
Right.
So we had to find our own support for each other.
Well, this
you
brings
know
up
I
two
mean?
Questions for me. We had on our show Dr. Varun Soni, who,
uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was talking about that one thing that's made it more difficult for us South Asians to come together as a community outside of Muslims or even Siddharas. Siddharjis are. There haven't been like a thing that's like really backlash incentive besides 9/11. Do you agree that the communities need something like an outside force to cause them to band together?
No, I don't think so. I mean, at the same time, we, you know, our parents did mostly have other South Asian friends and took us to dance class or whatever that was, you know. So there was that ethnocentric thing going on anyway,
before.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But it does seem like that caused quite a shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we had to create our own spaces. And so with Third Eye, we were a collective in many cities, and there were a lot of us putting the programming out and stuff like that and connecting to the communities and trying to create a space where we could talk about this kind of thing.
The other question you brought up, though, was about our communities. There's a stereotype, I don't know if it's a stereotype, it's something that I joke about often, is that we don't really fund our own art.
Oh, yeah,
and, like,
totally.
We're really, like, quick to fund other communities' art. And, like, my joke is, like, I remember I was invited to this party that Ambani was having out in L.A. once, like, I was out in L.A. for when Life of Pi was getting all their awards and stuff, and I just happened, so I got invited. And it was so crazy to me that Life of Pi was getting all of the success, and it was like, oh, wow. And Ambani had, like, you know, they had a big part in that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
well
totally.
Enough that they could have translated it to something, and their next movie was, like, this vampire school thing.
Yeah.
That had no South Asian, nothing to do with that.
Right,
it
right.
was really, it was just, like, such an interesting way. Okay, as soon as we get in, run away from.
Right.
That was, like, the way I interpreted it. Maybe I'm wrong or right, but I'm wondering, you must have had to deal with the community.
Oh, yeah.
What were the challenges?
Well, there was a lot. I mean, first of all, in California, you know, the immigration started in the 1800s
right.
with the Ellis Island of the West Coast, Angel Island. So there were a lot of Punjabis and Sikhs coming over.
This girl knows her history, boy.
Back in the day. And some of them were still alive. So after 9/11, we started bringing them out as guests to tell
oh,
us
wow.
their story. And then I also had the opportunity, because I was working at Center for Asian American Media, which is part of PBS. So I was able to get some anti-hate crimes documentaries, just like stuff, information about our community on a national broadcast and school distribution.
Oh, wow.
So one of those was South Asians in New York, Desi, which is like a definitive family-oriented documentary about our community and all the different regions and, you know.
Now required viewing to all of our listeners, including me.
But then there was another one called Turbans, which was actually made by one of the grandchildren of one of that 1908 generation, and her grandfather cut his hair in 1908. So it's shown as a tragedy, and like, or him making this decision. And when we aired it on PBS, the community got really upset that you're encouraging people to give up their traditions, which was not the intention of airing it. It was more to show this historical, you know, story. And we got a huge backlash.
Of course, you got backlash. I love backlash.
Well, I find that our community is very, very particular. Like, we can't talk about the bad stuff that happens.
Yeah.
They're very reticent for that. Is that, would you agree with that, that your experience with the community as well?
Yeah, somewhat. But also, I mean, after that backlash, they haven't funded anything else, going back to your point. I mean, how many years has it been now? There's maybe one or two other movies out there. You know,
still, since
yeah,
so it's like,
so yeah,
okay, exactly. If you don't like what you're seeing, then put your money where your mouth
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go, let's do that.
But then on the other hand, Bend It Like Beckham, ended up being one of the highest grossing British movies ever.
Of course, she married a white dude.
Well, Monsoon Wedding, also, and Mira Nair has done a lot of work. Now, it didn't it didn't have the same iconic sort of thing that, that Bend It Like Beckham
the
did,
the teen romance and all that.
No, but you're right. But you do actually do. It's funny though. You do bring up a good point. Like that was a very happy. There was nothing, anything that was bad. Like got fixed very quickly. There wasn't any real issues in Bend It Like Beckham. Like there, like Monsoon Wedding was dealing with a lot of like sexuality.
Yeah,
it was
dealing
with the infidelity. It was dealing with abuse.
Right.
It was dealing with all of that. Bend It Like Beckham was lighter and funnier and like more popcorn. So
yeah.
And. You know, like I said, like, you know, she ended up with the white dude, Jonathan Rhys Meyers.
And right? Keira Knightley ended up
Keira Knightley.
Launching her career.
Yeah, it's funny though, she launched her career a lot more than Perminda did.
Yeah.
Odd.
Is it? It's not really that odd. I could explain it to you in a couple of words. I can explain that pretty quickly. It ain't that odd.
Okay, so you
but then, okay, so the flip side of, you know, all this is I grew up in a place where, like, Jewish girls speak better Hindi than me, and they'll correct my pronunciation of my last name, and Catholic kids love Ganesh.
What are you talking about? Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up around here, which is the melting pot of America, supposedly, you know, and it's true in a way.
It's so funny, like, you keep talking about here, like, I lived here for 9 years, and your experience of here is so, so different than my experience of here.
Yeah.
Like, I lived for 9 years in this city, and to me, New York is the definition of a salad bowl. It is not melted together at all. People know things about each other, but people, like, keep their, like, lines from each other. This has been my experience.
Yeah.
But the way you're describing it is very different.
Well, I guess, A, when you're in school with people, you just have to, you know, deal with whoever.
Yeah,
and
but Jewish girls talking
be...
better Hindi than you with some other shit altogether.
Yeah, like, I don't know what's like. Jews know all this Hindi.
I don't know if that was a joke you're saying. Like, I don't know if that was like an embellishment. I don't know what you're doing right there, but we gotta go back. Because, like, I'm not following you at all.
Well, part of that is also because I started working in India and meeting people, you know, who had grown up with these various cultures and had also incorporated that into their lives. Like, either they were living in India also and coming back here or
let me clarify timeline stuff. These, when you're referring to these people that knew Hindi better, you knew the culture better, that was in high school or that was like in, that was later?
You're making it sound like, well, you went to high school with white girls who just spoke amazing Hindi.
That's what
we did have like Puerto Rican kids who spoke Hindi, and I didn't speak Hindi because I grew up in a Konkani and Marathi household.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
So,
but you spoke Konkani, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so in high school you had that, but these women that you're referring to and these people that you're referring, that's
maybe later.
That's later, and those are people that had like traveled to India and
How do these
but
Puerto
also
Ricans
who
know
grew
Hindi?
Up in Queens and stuff. So,
wait, you Puerto Ricans knew Hindi like fluently. This is a huge thing. This is crazy to me.
Because there were a lot of crews and gangs.
There were gangs, so they needed to speak Hindi fluently?
Well, there...
What?
Well, when
your
we were...
explanations are so, like, you just think we get it. Like, you think we just grew up there. We get it. Yeah, there were gangs, so obviously people knew Mandarin. You're not going to know Arabic if you were in the Bloods? Come on. They have a lot of trade. You know what I mean? They do a lot of business out there. That's the way you're making it sound like it's a real logical step, and I'm not getting that.
Well, we have, I mean, you know, if you grow up in each other's houses, then you pick up each other's culture, I
Best
guess, to
was
a certain extent.
Chinese, don't know any Mandarin. Know some cuss words, that's it.
No, but that is, it is, but you're describing an experience that most of us, and I can speak, most of our listeners are just not, did not grow up in.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I grew up in it, you're talking, and you know, and actually, even, you know, when we interviewed Reka, she had a similar experience growing up in here, and she would talk about that sort of conflation of communities that was seemed much more, very specific to this area.
Yeah.
Because growing up in the South, and one of the things, you know, one of the things that we bonded about was that we were so isolated because of our South Asian-ness, even from other, like, minority communities.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we grew up in mainly white areas, like, the, uh-huh. like much more than what you... So this is really... That's why this is really quite... That's why it's like a jump for us to really understand. And I think this is really important for us because it's sad to me that we've gone away from that.
Yeah.
It seems like there's been a shift away from that. I don't think the generations coming up like are like the ones that you're describing. And that's an interesting and kind of sad to me that
yeah.
because what you're describing is a beautiful standpoint of like everybody coming together and being for each other that is what I would want for, you know, our community, at least in other communities in the world on some level. It's sad that, like, what do you think has caused that shift away from that? Or do you even agree that there is a shift?
Well, I mean, within that, there was also, like you were saying, micro specific crews. Like, there was at remix parties and whatnot, there would be, you know, TKO, Tamil Knockout versus the Halal brothers, and they would get into fights because
no
someone danced with somebody's
saying,
girl.
Well,
you know?
So you're saying that, like, wow.
So there, I mean, because there's such a big community, like I was saying earlier.
Tamil Knockout was a gang?
Yeah, Tamil Knockout was a gang. There was the Halal Brothers.
The Halal
they had
Brothers
some Puerto
is such
Rican
a fun,
kids.
It's a food truck.
It is a food truck.
Yes,
now.
Before it was a food truck, it was a crew or a gang or whatever you
was
want to say.
Was it the same guys that made the food truck?
Maybe.
We should still kill and start serving.
I thought Halal was pretty widespread at this point. What specific region was the Halal Brothers from?
I don't know.
This is crazy.
I never asked.
So these gangs would get into fights. Like this was like.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was a thing.
This was a thing.
But is it still a thing?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask the younger kids, I guess.
What decade you grew up in? 90s, baby. 80s.
80s, 90s.
Okay.
But this is like 90s, 2000s.
But is it now? You're still close with the DJ world, yes?
Yeah. Somewhat.
Do you still hear about this shit? This shit's still happening?
Well,
I mean, we're going to try to find out. But,
I don't
know.
I don't know if kids need those spaces the way we did. Like, we used to have Mutiny and all these remix parties and stuff like that. And I don't know if they do that stuff anymore or they're just all online hanging out together in a different way now. And
right.
they have people on TV, and it's not such a big deal. I don't know the answer to that. Actually.
That's an interesting point. Now we're being seen more in the world, maybe it's less of an acting out sort of situation.
Yeah.
So let's go
maybe
back
not,
to that. But no, but let's use that as our segue to you making films.
Yeah.
Then so we're seeing somewhat of like where that came from. We're seeing where
yeah.
the social idea came from with your work. When did you decide? We're in somewhere in the early 2000s in our story with you.
Yeah.
When did you decide I'm going to India?
So I was, I had gone back to film school.
Uh-huh.
And then I was writing these kind of scripts about this world. And like you're saying, nobody knew what the hell I was talking about.
Right.
You know, because this was like Shonda Rhimes was not Shonda World yet. And
right.
that idea of this melting pot, we weren't seeing anywhere really.
Right.
So... So I have this story, and it was also post 9/11 New York and all the backlash against our community. And the first few stories I wrote, one was a post 9/11 war movie, one was about this Dot Busters in Jersey City, and then the third one was about my great uncle who was a painter who was stuck in Europe during World War II. So around 2003, so he was a painter, he died in 2001, and then he left 300 paintings in his basement.
Whoa.
And yeah. Around 2003, they went back to India, and they were supposed to be auctioned, and the money was supposed to go divided around the family. So I went back to research this story as they had just gone to auction. So that's when I started going to India to find these family stories. Oh, cool. And research, you know, my own work, basically. And then I was connecting with all these people. We were releasing their stuff here, and that exchange started happening.
Okay. Wow.
And there were a few other people, like Shalini Kantaya was there shooting Drop, and Prashant Bhargav, and Tanuj Chopra. And then all the British kids would go for their DJ stuff. And then some people from here, like Monica Dogra, moved back to India and started their careers there. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that became an interesting phenomenon also, of people from our generation going back to India and, you know, really flourishing there.
Let me ask you a question. So I've shot one thing. I filmed there. It was only 5 days. We filmed on Mud Island in May.
Oh, nice.
So brutal on so many levels. It was so hot, and they were drying fish constantly on the sides of the roads, and it was an overwhelming smell. But it was also the most incredible thing to get to film in the homeland for me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
To work there and to, like, what was it like for you when you started working there? Did it feel great, or was it overwhelming how many frustrations? There were a lot of challenges working there, let's be real. There are a lot of challenges over there.
The kinds of stories I'm telling are, maybe the British market has a understanding and a place for that in the industry, because they have the British Asian stuff going on. But here, it was a little too early. So going there and just feeling the love, and of course you're going to tell a World War II movie. Nobody thinks that's crazy. There's a space for that somewhere. And they already know something about that, that there were Indians in World War II to begin with. You know, that kind of stuff was very encouraging.
Did you get tempted to stay there?
What?
Did you get tempted to stay there?
Yeah, I did, actually. And then So I had started going every year, actually, and then on one trip, the year after this, I guess, at the same story with the paintings, I wrote the feature script. I went back to India again, and I had booked a 2-week trip, and on my last day there, I had met this woman, Banu Athaya, she won an Oscar for doing the wardrobes for Gandhi.
Oh.
And I had met her at a film festival here, and she had given me her email. And so I emailed her my last day in India, and she's like, come to my studio. She has this amazing studio with all of her sketches, and she made all these iconic Bollywood movies too and stuff. And it turned out my great uncle, who I was writing this script about, grew up in the house next to her. Yeah. And she got the same scholarship that he got 20 years later to go to Europe. And she had never heard this story, and so she was very supportive, and she was like, if you come back tomorrow, if you change your ticket and come back tomorrow, like, I'll help you more with your project. Which here, I have never found any mentorship in that kind of way, of someone who really gets what you're trying to do.
Right.
So after that, I was
now,
sold.
Now, this is still 2000, around
this
when
this was 2006, 7 sometime.
Do you think things are different now?
In India?
No, here.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, in a way, definitely from a talent perspective, there are more shows on television and more opportunities. But at the same time, it's like we're educating ourselves about our own history.
Yeah, apparently.
In the first place.
Apparently we are. You know?
And then it's like trying to find the industry ladder to make that come out. It's like a lot of work for one or two people. I mean, so we have to just get together and form collectives and put the work out.
So is there a collective now that we should be aware of? What's happening? You're obviously more tapped in some ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean...
What do you know that
in
we
New
don't?
York, actually right here at Simple Studios.
Teach us.
Simple Studios, the South Asian Film Lab has been meeting every 2 weeks. So that's writers and directors and actors, and we workshop new scripts all the time. Mm-hmm. And then in LA, there's the IFLA Film Festival, where a lot of industry people come and they kind of understand what the diaspora work is about and stuff. And in New York, there are a couple of festivals too, the South Asian Film Festival.
But do we need more than festivals, or is that... Like what is your fantasy?
Yeah, we
is
need
it studio
a marketplace.
Execs? Is it production
oh,
companies?
Oh, it's everything.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Because we're coming up in the noticed that we're coming up in the studio executive.
Oh,
shit
definitely.
As well.
Yeah.
Like, but it seems like that's mainly in TV.
Yeah.
That might just
probably.
Be though because my experience because I'm in TV a lot right now and like I've been working in TV for the last couple of years. Maybe I'm just a little bit more focused on that,
yeah.
So I'm seeing that more. But I have noticed that that's definitely that there's...
There are people coming up here and there. But then again, it's like, you know, there's the corporate interest of the studio or the network. And does that tie into what you're doing necessarily? You know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
You're right, because it does. We got a lot of people up in there and that aren't necessarily... I mean, Aziz has been... How did you feel? Was Masters of None just a wonderful thing for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I used to go to his UCB Monday nights.
Yeah, she was telling me that.
Which was... And then watching him sell out the Garden was crazy, and I was, like, so proud of that happening. And then, yeah, Master of None also has been great.
But it is a difference, like, you know... There has to be a concerted effort by our community to tell our stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And it goes back to that thing that when I was talking about Mbani, like there is a desire to, as soon as we make it, there seems like a desire to run away from our history.
Yeah.
And run away from that. And I don't entirely know why. If you have an idea, I'd love to hear it.
Well, I mean, I guess they were making a business decision, so they just invested with the biggest Hollywood companies, right? I mean, it wasn't necessarily about
us. Right, I know, but that's where I'm saying is that that's a priority that I wonder.
Yeah.
That doesn't serve our community.
Right, of course.
It serves themselves. It's a very, which is, and you're right. I mean, who's to place, I'm trying not to place judgment on it. It's more for me just to understand, because I would, you know.
Well, and then even in India, it's like, well, then they want Bollywood stars, and that whole thing is a different entity, you know?
Right.
Compared to what we're doing.
Right, from a standpoint of even just like the type of acting they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because if you're trying to tell like a deeply emotional, like, it is almost an entirely different...
Yeah, Shah Rukh Khan can do that?
No, it's
head shake, start crying.
The one single tear.
It is a different... their acting is... It's almost a different style. It is a little bit more presentational. It is a little bit more of the acting like ours was back in like the Casablanca days. Like, it was... Like, there's been a huge shift amongst performance here in the States and West that you actually find in, like, Satyajit Rai films. You know, his films are deeply, like, specific and naturalistic in a very profound way. But most of Bollywood has not really been about that.
Thank God.
Just a hater.
Just like a lover.
Well,
let me... So,
yeah, no, I mean, it's like people love Bollywood in Russia and in... Peru and all over the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
So you talked about has
you
stuff.
Know Africans watching the King's speech? Get out of here. The artist all born ass silent film?
They're watching Obama's speech.
Fair enough.
You talked about shifts that are happening here. What has changed in India? Has things changed in India?
Well, in the 90s, I had some friends who were trying to break into acting there, and they would... It was very mob-related, apparently.
Really?
Right,
yeah.
Mob and families, yeah. Seriously,
and they would just be like, oh, we're shooting the... We changed the location to a different state because some deal is happening, and then they would get paid in garbage bags of cash and stuff like that.
So
I think now it's become...
God! I love us, man. Garbage bags of money. Bang. You need money ball now. Go.
No, but seriously, I mean, they're
so
talking
now
about
it's
like, the Italian mob.
More...
Like,
you got a mob.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Shanta's
I mean, I grew up
in
Jersey
story.
With the mob girls.
So. Oh, yeah.
But no, we interrupted you. You were saying, so.
That, oh yeah. So, so now it's become. I mean, it's become more. I don't know, official or.
Yeah.
You know.
It was obviously been a big shift, but I meant more of like the way that you were describing. So they were very supportive of story, and oh, yeah. all your sort of stuff. It seems like a fairly ideal place for a filmmaker and a South Asian artist that wants to tell those kind of stories. I'm wondering why, with all the challenges that we have here in the States, why not stay there?
I considered it, I don't know. Well, A, yeah, I mean, it is more Bollywood oriented and...
So there were what I'm hearing is that there were their own challenges there that weren't.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't like this paradise, like ideal sort of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
They had its issues, so there were pros and cons to both.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And on one hand, I mean, you have like all these people on set, amazing craftsmanship, and if you want to create a market right now, you know, on a empty stage, it'll be done in an hour. You know, it's just amazing over
this
there.
Is
the
in
way
India.
People work. Yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the designers and the work that they would do is top notch.
Oh yeah,
it seemed
totally.
To be, it was like politics around who you have to cast.
Exactly.
And that,
which is probably anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. So are you working on stuff now? Where are you at now with this? Like you're here in the States making films. Are you still?
Yeah.
Are you still? Is Third Eye still?
Third Eye is still a festival in San Francisco. I'm not involved anymore, but it's still going, and they just hosted Peddlers and some other movies from India last year.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Every November.
And then what about you? Are you working on specific films, or is there stuff you want to talk about, like where you?
Yeah, I have like 10 projects. I'm trying to get financed.
Get that. Be South Asian about that. 10
now,
projects.
Okay, let's talk about you. Okay, so let's talk about you when you're looking at financing. Is it easier for you? What would your ideal finance look like coming from the South Asian? They see, would you rather your money coming from there? Do you give a fuck? You just want the money from wherever.
Green money. It doesn't matter where.
Green money.
Most South Asian thing ever been said.
It can be brown or not brown.
But is it? Most basic things been said on this podcast.
And bags of it.
But do you have different, like, if when you invite in different financiers, though, they have, they invite different, you're getting into bed with certain people that might want X, might want Z.
Or they may just want to get in bed with you because.
I mean.
We did a whole episode on that.
So I mean, are there problems for that?
Well, I mean, like I was saying, the American institutions didn't really understand my work, and it's only now that people have crossed over that we're kind of on all these radars suddenly, and. It was interesting for me. So when I was pitching that World War II story, the German and European funders don't want those stories anymore. But it was interesting for an Indian audience. And for Americans, it was like, oh, I didn't even know Indians were in World War II.
Right.
You know, so it's you can only learn that by pitching, and it may even be an investor-by-investor situation.
Right.
But now this other... So this year... So the South Asian Film Lab had a showcase with the IFP and the WGA in March. So for that, I had a jazz
walk us
era.
Back and tell us what these
oh, yeah.
are. Slow so down with just throwing out the
names out there. The T-Dots and the Halal Boys just getting in
so
fights
all the
time. So the Halal
Brothers
you know what
had a workshop with...
So who was having a workshop with who? The South Asian Film Lab that you
Yeah, the South
that you
Asian Film Lab. Yeah, so they've been meeting every 2 weeks. So after a year, they did a public reading with three scripts with the Independent Feature Project, which supports a lot of the emerging directors in the U.S. in the independent scene.
Oh, nice.
And with the Writers Guild of America, which represents the writers.
Great.
And so... I had a script in that, which is about a Indian princess in the 1920s jazz age, which is based on a true story.
Wow.
And Cole Porter wrote Let's Misbehave for Her.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's also about, you know, that time period and the different choices people had to make. and the
Can we
gilded
just have you
cage.
Back on to give us a history lesson? Because like I'm like there's so we
Who
have
is
to,
Cole
well
Porter?
You know what happened?
What? Wait, hold on.
He was
what?
One of the big Broadway or and jazz
oh, don't care.
Composers.
And jazz. It's Cole
Barely
Porter.
Care.
Oh my god.
He wrote.
Don't even go there with him. Don't even try to help him out.
Broadway,
Lost jazz. Jazz. Are you gonna tell me like you don't like jazz? I can't.
It ain't
I was about to say, I don't even know why I do this show with you. And then you came out with that, and I'm like, this is why I love you, bro. we have to wrap this up. Our time is running short still, but thank you so much
for coming. Thank you.
Seriously, we're going to have you back on to just give a history lesson. I think that would be really, really fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is brown is beautiful, and we should know, you know, where we came from.
Are there resources? Are there resources that, like, you know, if people have interest or ourselves, like, that we can go to? Or is this, like, a word-of-mouth thing? Or do we even need to build those resources?
I think there's the Indian American Oral History Project. I'm not sure. South Asian American Digital Archive. But these are stories, like, I saw a photograph of a Indian flapper in Bombay, and Boardwalk Empire was on TV, and I was like, why aren't we in there? Because
right.
Apparently this woman was there.
Well, that's the thing, is people don't know about it.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
I mean? You know, I've always made the thing, like, I've always been sad that, like, I can never be in a Western.
Yeah.
Like, what if maybe we are?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
no. Probably dude out there just
exactly.
Killing dudes.
Right.
With
I mean,
his Mexican
with a,
girl.
With a garbage bag full of green cash. And gold. At that time, it was just gold. Shilpa, thank you so much for coming on the
Thanks,
show.
Guys.
To our listeners, if you've got money, hit up Shilpa. Give her that money so she can make these films. Is there a way for people to reach out to you? Are you on Twitter? Are you on the Facebook?
Yeah, like, I'm on Twitter, ShilpaMS1.
Okay, do that one more time for everybody.
ShilpaMS1, ShilpaMS1 on Twitter.
Nice. Find her on that Twitter. Show her love. She's making good shit. Guys, as always, I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you next week.
God bless.